Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by my old friend Lockwood Phillips. We're going to be talking this week about the cut in American aid to Central America and the refugee problem, White House security clearances, the Brexit broken record, Israeli elections, and Venezuela, among other things. I hope you enjoy listening.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms. This afternoon's program, of course, just as we begin the program, to remind you, is being pre-recorded since he is now, due to daylight savings time, which the Brits apparently are celebrating, he's back 5 hours ahead of us. So with that as the opening of the program, always to remind you about Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, joining us every Wednesday afternoon. And we have a plethora of issues to discuss this afternoon, and I hope you understand the word plethora, Tom, but anyhow, with that, good afternoon.
No, you have to get that. I'll look it up while we're talking.
Okay, just a quick note, how's the weather in England, in London?
It's cool, but definite signs of spring. I'm looking out the window at the cherry blossoms, and out the back window at our apple tree where the blossoms are coming out. The daffodils are now over, which is a good sign. The rest of spring is not far behind it. So when the sun comes out, it's very nice. It's cool, but very nice. We're definitely into spring.
And we are finally seeing spring here as well once we get this nor'easter past us, heading up the New England coast. All right, Tom, a lot to talk about today. Let's start off with the events here in the States. Always interested in what the opinion is of the European community and the European press has about the issue of events here in the States. And the story of note, that, of course, being the immigration issue here in the States and the declaration recently by Kirstjen Nielsen, Department of Homeland Security, noting that this is now a crisis. Let's start with the announcement by President Trump of his intentions to cut off aid to Central America. How is that being played?
Yeah, well, I took initiative there and phoned a few friends in the Foreign Office and at the British Department for International Development, and also someone at a think tank in Brussels, who said basically, that is just about the most stupid thing that the Trump administration has ever done.
Okay. I fully expected this from you and your various sources. Why is it the stupid thing in light of the fact that we've been giving aid to those countries and it hasn't seemed to work to the extent that we're still seeing more refugees?
Now you're guaranteeing that the situation would deteriorate even more, and so you're likely to get more people wanting to come. So you're making a bad situation even worse.
The problem we have here in the States, and I'm speaking just as an observer, is we've been giving all this money. Where has this money been going? And might we want to step in and make some arrangement going forward? Because apparently this money has not assisted these countries.
Well, it depends on your definition of arrangement. If you mean taking over the countries, no, I don't think that would be a very good idea. If you mean taking over more control of how the money is spent within certain political parameters, yeah, probably that would be welcomed. Now, you would like to draw, I'm sure, parallels with the EU and the boat people crossing the Mediterranean. And there are signs that the number of boat people are starting to drop off. Now, I think part of this is the fact that people like Matteo Salvini in Italy are being less friendly towards them, but also is the fact that they are starting to be more effective in one, screening people in Libya, where a lot of them are coming from, and they're also giving a lot more aid to create jobs in the sub-Saharan African countries just south of Libya. So the need to immigrate is not so great, and the controls over that immigration, because they have more people on the ground monitoring the That is, the EU has more people on the ground monitoring those people applying for applications to come to Europe. That's how it's being dealt with here. It's still, you still get a lot of people, but they're fewer.
There's greater control there than on the European borders than we have on the U.S. border, from my first description of what you've just told us, which plays perfectly into the hands of President Trump's initiatives. He's trying to restrain these refugees. Apparently, European Union and the European community is doing a better job of that. And I think that's, and also part of,
I disagree about what you're saying about control. It varies from country to country. It's the case in Italy. They're much more welcoming in countries like Spain, France, and Malta, and a bit more welcoming, but not completely in Greece. You do have the problems in Eastern Europe where they put up fences, but I don't think that your comparison is good there.
I will say that obviously we need to take a cue from Italy. I think they're doing an excellent job. Number one, on the boat people that were coming into London, when they made landfall in London, were they accepted as refugees or were they possibly sent back to their initial country?
It depended on each individual case.
Okay.
Each one was judged individually. Some of them were accepted as asylum seekers. And some of them were sent back.
But not to the numbers. We're seeing thousands coming into the United States. And by the way,
we're seeing 100 or so here.
Yeah, this is, our situation is far worse, I think, than what we've seen in Italy and quite frankly, Hungarian border. So, we're talking about thousands that are continually on a daily basis, no less.
You always ask me what the opinion is in the European press. They accept that there's a crisis. They don't accept that it's the same type of crisis which President Trump talks about. They look upon it more as a humanitarian crisis.
And that wasn't a humanitarian crisis in the Hungarian border and Italy?
Yes, and the same argument's being made here. But they see it more as a humanitarian crisis that, you know, people are being stuck in these camps, in many cases unsanitary conditions.
And they were not even allowed into Hungary or Italy. And in fact, the boat people were left.
Now they're being stuck in camps in Turkey.
Right. So
a large number of them, or they're being stuck in camps in southern Libya.
Okay. I want to move on, but I just think that it's interesting. The comparisons there. All right. There are several issues here that I want to touch on because I want to continue this conversation related to the topic of immigrants, but also one of the topics that we've seen here recently is the Pope has announced, of course, his concern associated with the immigrants in the U.S. So we haven't seen much in the way of his discussion about immigrants coming into the European community. But the other thing that we found very interesting and I find very hypocritical is that the Pope is saying he's opposed to walls. And I made note in my program last evening that the Vatican is a sovereign country. And if I'm not mistaken, there's a wall around the Vatican.
But it's what the wall was built for. And it wasn't built to keep out immigrants. It was to keep out the hordes, not of immigrants.
Hordes and immigrants, I think, are comparable.
I know that President Trump says they're all druggists, rapists, and murderers.
Not all.
Rome in the 7th century were literally burning it to the ground.
Not all. And by the way, we're fearful of that very event happening here. Okay, let's move on to other issues. We've talked about the topic of immigration. The other subject, of course, of note, the White House security clearance concern. I think there's some 57 people who were given clearances.
Yeah,
is that getting much coverage?
I spoke to a friend of mine who's an MI5 about this, and he said, why were they even allowed in the White House before they had been cleared?
Well,
And I thought I'd throw that question at you. I mean, why were they allowed to have access to classified information before they had been cleared?
Well, first question is, we don't know, you know, the whole concept of classified information, is really nebulous, but number two.
You're not going to answer the question.
Number two, I have no details on how, and I could never even answer the question, what the security process is. And I would argue quickly, in light of the fact that we've seen this in other, administrations, where folks that would not necessarily have been given security clearance have been, in fact, offered security clearances by previous presidents. So I think that this is much a story, much ado about nothing, but I just wondered, it is getting covered there, in other words.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
It is getting coverage.
All right.
Definitely.
Yeah. All right. What about the Biden sex scandal? Pardon me. It's not a sex scandal.
I think there's a sneaking sympathy for Joe Biden.
Really?
Yeah. Here's a man. How old is he? 74?
73. Yeah.
73. Uh-huh. I'm sorry, Joe. I didn't mean to age you a year. And, you know, he was raised in a different age. To kiss a woman on the back of the head was...
But wait a second. I mean, really, this is extremely acting very familiar with these people. It is stunning if you see the pictures. Have the pictures been displayed there in the European community?
Yeah, I think it's a bit different from saying that all women like to have sex with me and I want to, you know, if I back them up against the wall,
grab
their genitals.
Hold on. There is nothing of that nature. It's just a matter of acting extremely familiar. In defense of the former vice president, there's been no accusations of that nature. It's just basically that he seems to be extremely, and I'm using the word familiar, that he's kissing them and holding them in fashions that would be uncomfortable for someone you've met on your first experience.
I think Joe Biden is popular.
Okay.
And I think he's popular by association with Obama, because I think Obama was popular here in Europe.
Interesting.
I think that you will find an underswell of support for Joe Biden over the Me Too issue.
We'll get back to that in a moment. We've got to take a quick break here with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio, here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We've got him joining us, of course, from London, England, where they are now celebrating daylight savings. So they're paralleling, if you're not almost, you're repeating the same mistakes we make here in the States as well. But we'll talk about that at another time. Big issue, one that I want to focus on, and it's related to international relations. First, let's talk about Venezuela. I told you today that, in fact, Russia has introduced weapons and soldiers into Venezuela. And earlier today, I learned that China is doing the same thing. Is the Venezuela issue getting coverage? Is there any sympathy for, arguably, the elected official, President Guaido? I think I'm pronouncing his last name.
Guaido.
Okay. But my question is Venezuela being covered? And is there any sense that this is a potential explosive environment?
It is. It's not seen as so much of a European issue because, you know, the Monroe Doctrine and, you know, America's backyard and everything else. And so it's being followed. And the EU has said that it supports the U.S. but would not support military intervention. Now, you told me earlier that the Chinese are sending troops to support Maduro. I am very shocked and surprised at this, because the Chinese are usually very pragmatic. And I think by sending troops, they're running the risk of having a military response from the U.S. And if that's the case, they go into these things with their eyes open.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking for a fight. They're trying to put, if that's the case, I think you should be seriously worried, because they are actually trying to create grounds for a clash where there shouldn't be grounds.
We've talked about this in the past in relationship to China. Of course, as China's working into Africa, and we're going to get to that in a few moments as well. China, of course, is attempting to spread its influence predominantly through investments with Russia in Venezuela. How do the Chinese and the Russians get along in that regard? Is that sort of best of enemies, if you will?
No, not even best of enemies. Not best of friends, but certainly friends. At the moment, Russia is the junior partner and China is the senior partner, because it's just a lot wealthier and a lot bigger. That could change if the Russians manage to sort out their economy a bit better and their political situation. But they are cooperating a lot in something called the Shanghai Economic Cooperation Forum. and are working politically in tandem quite a bit. A bit like the EU and US.
Next question goes to the role of Russia trying to spread its influence. Its finances are not in that good order, are they? And my question is, would this possibly stretch the Russian influence beyond its point to be able to support it?
I think it would. I don't see how they can support it. I mean, they don't really have a base in the region at all. I mean, Cuba's, they no longer have any real connection with Cuba. So, yeah, I think it would sorely strain their resources.
Now, you bring up Cuba, and I think it's an interesting comparison because, quite frankly, Russia was trying to gain a foothold here in the Western Hemisphere with Cuba. Let's talk about the impact on the leadership of Venezuela, and I'm curious how Europe sees Maduro versus Guaido or Guido.
The same way the U.S. does. They have called for Maduro to step down.
But the question is not going
to... And they recognize Guaido as the president.
But it's not happening. So I'm wondering, is there a point where the European community will step in and either...
No. They've said they don't want to step in. And I don't think, I may be wrong, but according to Monroe Doctrine, I don't think the United States would want them to step in. This is in America's backyard, and they would expect Europe to provide political and maybe some economic intelligence support, but it's primarily of American concern. That does not stop the EU from expressing its opinion on whether or not there should be American military involvement.
Okay, the other aspect, of course, is the European community's relationship with both China and Russia in relationship to this event, possibly through sanctions. I think that would be premature for us to address that at this point. But I want to talk about one other issue of international issue with the U.S., and that, of course, is Africa. The Secretary of Department of State has expressed concerns with the growing influence of China and Russia in Africa, John Bolton. And what is the opinion of the European community there related to the concerns in Africa?
Actions speak louder than words. I mean, China is investing in terms of infrastructure investment and aid, something like eight times what the U.S. is putting in.
But what about Europe? What about Europe? What about Europe being a...
Europe doesn't have anywhere near the same type kind of investment money.
Why?
And it is putting in more. There's been a spate of articles recently, by the way, that say that Africa is going to be the next China. And that really the people who are investing in Africa now are the ones who are going to reap the benefit. And at the moment, it's China.
But China
will reap the benefit, and reap the benefit because the U.S. and, yes, you're right, Europe, have gotten their fingers burned in the past, and they are more reluctant because of that to invest now.
Is it an issue in Europe that there's some fear related to that colonial opinion of Europe when efforts were made by a variety of European countries, Holland, for example, and of course Spain and Great Britain and France trying to colonize Africa. Is there hesitancy, resistance in the European community to get actively involved? I've got to bring up this topic.
Not so much colonies. It's the aftermath of independence. What happened after independence was there was a heavy investment by the former colonial powers in Africa. A lot of aid went pouring into Africa, and it just disappeared down a rat hole.
And what's to keep China having that problem?
Basically, these countries were not prepared to deal with it.
All right.
They didn't have the political infrastructure. They didn't have the economic infrastructure, anything else to deal with it. And the aid was really more of a sort of guilt aid than anything else.
But here's the question.
Now they are more prepared to deal with it, but the Europeans had lost so much money in that immediate post-colonial period that they are reluctant. Their experience makes them reluctant to put any more money in.
But Tom, here's a quick question for you. We've seen interruptions and disruptions in the various countries there in Africa. Frankly, numerous civil wars continuing. So there, you really feel that those countries are better prepared to handle the finances, and you don't think that China stands to lose greatly if in their investments there in Africa?
Some of them do, some of them don't. And I'm not saying that you should invest in every venture in Africa or in every African country.
Okay.
But there are some African countries, such as, I think to a certain degree, South Africa, certainly Botswana, Zambia is not so bad.
Okay. Okay.
Where there is, and, Kenya, where there is, tremendous scope for investment. And basically, the West is not investing, but China is.
All right. Very quickly, and I've got up against the clock again. Tom Arms, lookaheadnews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us here on Viewpoints Around the World. Tom, very quickly, one of the things that frustrates our audience here is that quite often everybody looks to the United States for the solutions. The frustration we have here in the States is Europe should be playing a bigger role. And that's just an observation. I just want to share that with you. I've got to go to a break. Our guest this afternoon, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. 3 cheers for the voters of Slovakia. And a 21-gun salute for Zuzana Kaputova, the new Slovak president and heroine of Western liberalism. Or is it hero in this new gender-free PC world? Liberals and everyone else should cheer because Kaputova, in stark contrast to just about every political campaign fought by anyone anywhere in the world, completely eschewed the populist rhetoric, character assassinations, name-calling, intimidatory chants, lies, xenophobia, racism, intolerance, and personal attacks that are debasing democratic political systems everywhere. Instead of appealing to phobias and exclusivity, Kaputova ran a campaign urging tolerance and inclusiveness. Slovakia has been a good example of the depths to which democracy is capable of sinking. The ruling Smer party has strong links to the country's wartime fascist past. Co-founder Jan Slotter has stated that the country's minority Roma problem could be solved with a long whip in a short room. Robert Fico, former prime minister and still the power behind the throne, has said Slovakia will not accept one single Muslim. Fico was forced to resign a year ago after the murder of investigative journalist Jan Kuciak, who was on the verge of publishing a story about links between Fico's staff and the mafia. Fico's one redeeming quality is his dislike of Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban, whom he's branded as a dangerous ultra-nationalist, although this attack should be seen within the context of a general Slovakian prejudice against Hungarians. 45-year-old Kaputova emerged from this political morass in 2013 when she led a campaign against a toxic landfill outside her hometown. In 2017 and 2018, she helped to organize anti-government protests following the murder of Kuciak. Despite her activities, Kaputova was a surprise entry in the presidential race and started the campaign at the bottom of the opinion poll. Her election slogan was "Stand Up to Evil," and her quiet, carefully reasoned arguments that stuck to the facts and avoided personalities struck a chord with the Slovak electorate. It was also a welcome and refreshing change from the typical populist rhetoric of her Smer opponent, Mara Sefcovic. In her acceptance speech, Kaputova showed that her victory showed the importance of humanism, solidarity, and truth. She added, "I'm happy, not just for the result, but mainly because I have proven that it is possible not to succumb to populism, to tell the truth, to raise interest without aggressive vocabulary." Before liberals get too excited, the Slovakian presidency is a largely ceremonial position. However, the president does appoint the country's top judges and is commander-in-chief of the armed forces. She also leads negotiations in the formation of coalition governments if they are required, and they almost always are in Slovakia because of Slovakia's proportional representation electoral system. The most important part of the president's role is representing the character of the country. They are symbolic in a world where symbols are important. The president is seen as above the cut and thrust of daily politics.
a reflection of how the country views itself and wants to become more than what it actually is. Kapitova is now the moral leader of a small East European country. She has bucked the trend towards dangerously oversimplified populism mixed with fear-based intolerance. Kapitova has demonstrated that the answer to the populists who shout their invective from the proverbial rooftops is not to match them decibel for decibel or half-truth for half-truth. She has shown that sloganeering, lies and misinformation can be successfully countered at the ballot box with a carefully constructed quiet campaign based on facts and sound policy. Larger democracies take note. Learn from the example set by Zuzana Kapitova.
We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We're going to touch on issues associated with European activities. I want to go to two quick questions for you, Tom, because I want to spend time on Brexit. We've talked about the situation with Guaido in Venezuela, a young leader. We've had the situation now with Emmanuel Macron in France, and of course the Yellow Vest. The continuing story now of the Canadian events, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, he seems to have some serious problems associated with efforts to protect a company in Canada, and that's the accusations. Very quickly, so that we can get on to the issue of Brexit, is this a challenge for young leaders? In other words, are we seeing that young leaders aren't quite as prepared to lead and handle the intricacies of governance that we anticipate? Because these
Of course, the Constitution says you have to be at least 36 years old to be President of the United States.
Right.
But having said that, one of the most successful prime ministers in history was William Pitt the Younger, who became prime minister at the age of 24.
But that was then. I'm talking now.
It really is up to the person quite often. And sometimes a young person will fit in to the existing circumstances and be able to offer a new perspective on things. Mm-hmm. And other times it's the old head that's required. So I don't think there's a hard and fast rule. Generally, I agree with you that it's good to have political experience. It's good to have diplomatic or business experience before you go for these high offices. But as I said, sometimes it's a good idea to have a fresh eye.
Right. Well, it's just been I'm thinking it's a little unfortunate simply because we do need new blood coming into leadership roles. Let's talk now about the topic of Brexit. This is, are we any closer to a solution?
Well, you know, when I sent you the note, about what to discuss, mm-hmm. we were heading at 100 miles an hour towards a no deal Brexit.
Uh-huh.
Yesterday there was a 7-hour cabinet meeting. A 7-hour cabinet meeting. And it was partly responded by, or partly in response to a letter from the cabinet secretary, who's the equivalent of the chief of staff.
Mm-hmm.
But here in Britain, he's a civil servant.
Right. And?
A chap by the name of Mark Sedwell.
Right.
And he wrote to every cabinet minister and said, if we go for a no deal, food prices will go up 10%. We'll probably have a breakout of violence in Northern Ireland. Scotland is likely to break away. Cost of borrowing, especially for unsecured credit card borrowing, would go up substantially. The pound will drop substantially. National security will be jeopardized because Britain will no longer be sharing intelligence with EU members. And the government will need to find billions and billions of pounds to bail out businesses and save jobs faced with Brexit bankruptcy.
Okay, so the conclusion.
So you don't want a no deal.
The conclusion?
Well, the conclusion is that Theresa May has said, basically, I don't care what the right wing of my Conservative Party says, I am going to enter into an agreement with the Labour Party and we're going to find a solution. So tomorrow she's meeting with the leader of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, to come up with a very soft Brexit deal.
Okay, so does it look like you're going to extend the deadline?
Yeah, she's going to ask for an extension.
Okay.
to, I think, the 22nd of May, and that, and then she's going to ask for a soft Brexit deal, which will totally, totally destroy her Conservative Party. Is that, that's what people are saying, at least. So, you know, it will really cost, it could cost her the breakup of her political party.
Okay. These are intricacies that will, quite frankly, a little confusing to us since it's a parliamentary process. Before we go to other issues, amidst all of this, are we seeing, businesses in Europe, in the UK and London, or pardon me, in England, leaving still, or are they, holding fast?
Yeah, they're still concerned about the uncertainty. So, you know, I think this would put a pause in their leaving, mm-hmm. Until they hear or find out, what is finally agreed by Jeremy Corbyn and Theresa May, if they can agree something. What Jeremy Corbyn wants is for Britain to stay in the customs union, which would rule out any trade deal with the U.S.
Okay. All right. And of course, that this is all contrary to what the president, that is President Trump, proposed at the outset. Let's move on to other items. I want to go to Turkey. You've got a note here, Erdogan's, and that's, of course, the President Erdogan of Turkey's troubles. I want to bring this up in relationship also to F-35 sales to Turkey. But let's start with your comment about President Erdogan.
Well, let's start. He controls the press. Right. He's locked up most of the judiciary. Mm-hmm. He's locked up his political opponents. And then he has local elections, and he loses them in Turkey's biggest city. The first time he's lost an election in Istanbul since he was elected mayor in 1994.
Wow.
Now, what it shows is he's beatable. But can be beaten.
But he's also a dictator.
No, he's not a dictator. He's an elected dictator.
Right.
He's not a dictator in the true sense of the word. He has to face elections. He has to face an electorate. Now, he controls the media. And despite the fact that he controlled the media, despite the fact that he controlled every conceivable lever of power, he lost the elections, which just proves he only lost by 25,000 votes.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he should have won so overwhelmingly. But he lost, and it just shows that he's beatable, and this has given huge heart to the opposition party.
Well, the problem is what's the status of the army and military?
The status of the army and military is, you know, most of the officers are looking out from behind bars in jail. They've been they were arrested.
Right.
They are no longer a political influence.
I felt that he probably owned the military. He does not own the military. He does not have control.
Well, in a sense, he owns the military, but, you know, right. The military has always been a political counterweight, so that if the civilian government misbehaved, it would step in, and it had done many, many times since the end of World War II.
All right. I want to move on very quickly related to military because we have two other items I want to cover before we go to the next break. The United States has announced they're going to stop the sale of F-35 airplanes to and technology to Turkey because Turkey has decided to purchase anti-aircraft and radar materials and equipment from Russia. Is that getting any play there in the European community?
Yes, it is. Not a great deal of play at the moment. I mean, we're still focused Brexit. Brexit focused.
All right.
But it is getting some play, and you know, people are worried because Turkey is an important member of NATO. It is flirting with the Russians.
Mm-hmm.
Erdogan is flirting with Islamic fundamentalism, but things like this election are going to strengthen the secularist.
Okay.
Because it's the secularist who won in Istanbul.
All right. We'll pay close attention to that. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us. Tom, let's talk about two items before we go to the next break. Populism takes a hit in the Czech Republic. What gives there?
Well, it wasn't Czech Republic. I'm sorry. It was Slovakia.
Oh, Slovakia. Okay.
Slovakia. Yeah. Yeah. Now, this, I've got a new hero. Zazuma Kaputova,
mm-hmm.
a 42-year-old lady, has been elected president. Now, the interesting about, let me just read you a quote.
Okay, saying, quickly.
I am happy to have won, not just for the result, she said, but mainly because I have proven that it is possible not to succumb to populism, to tell the truth, to raise interest without aggressive vocabulary. She never, ever attacked her opponents during the campaign.
All right.
Never.
All
she
right.
never indulged in any character okay. assassinations or anything like that.
Maybe that's...
They
an-
went after her, hook, line, and sinker, and she just... took the moral high ground, and she won overwhelmingly.
All right, that may be a new trend. I want to go to one other quick election before we take this break. Very quickly, the Israeli election, what's the future there?
Well, it's going to be tight. It's really close. The election's on the 9th of April,
mm-hmm.
It beginning to look as if Netanyahu may be edging ahead. The key, because they have proportional representation in 14 different political parties, comes not so much in the election, but in the haggling afterwards about how to form a coalition
governments. That's always
coalition government,
yeah,
and it really is a question of whether Netanyahu and the people to the right of Netanyahu on the political spectrum win enough seats, and they need 61 to form a government, and whether or not he will have to rely on the extreme right of the political spectrum that wants basically to set up an apartheid state and disenfranchise all the Arab voters.
Right. We've talked about this in the past, and we'll follow up on this as well as the election comes near. Of course, Tom Arms with LookAheadNews.com with us. And, of course, you're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. As we wrap things up in this last 5 minutes of our conversation, we are always looking forward to that little twist in the conversation and the news around the world. But before we get to that, I want to talk very quickly, Tom, about the Ukrainian president is a joke.
Well, if the one who's ahead wins, he definitely will be. He's won the first round of Volodymyr Zelensky. He's won the first round overwhelmingly, and there's going to be a second round on 21st of April. Do you remember the Robin Williams film, 2006 film, Man of the Year,
yes.
where a comedian
yes.
won the presidential elections?
Yes.
Okay, that's exactly what's happened in the Ukraine.
So is that bad for the Ukraine?
Well, we don't know.
Okay.
But Zelensky has a television sitcom in which he plays the part of an average Joe who runs for president and is elected. And now he's done it.
So what is the term? Reflecting reality or something?
I think
yes.
The public know what we're saying.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, let's wrap it up with you choose April Fool's prank.
Okay, I've got some April Fool's stories here, right. And I want you to tell me whether or not they are true or false.
All right, let's do it.
Nigerians are using their mobile phones to order takeaway pizzas from London.
True.
Absolutely. The Agriculture Minister, Audi Ogbe, used this as an example of unnecessary foreign food imports. Goliath groupers, that's the fish, are being used by the U.S. Navy to track enemy activity.
True. I know that for a fact.
Yeah. Oh, well done. And finally, mosquito bites can be avoided by listening to rap music.
You know what? I'm going to say that's true.
That's right. Apparently, mosquitoes have good taste in music.
Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com here with us this afternoon. As always, just to look for his website, LookAheadNews.com, or And of course, I also on his radio blog, I also want to thank Tom, as always, for giving us this quick twist on the end of the program as we just wrap things up just after April Fool's Day. Tom, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Lockwood.
Viewpoints around the world here on the Talk Station, FM 107, AM 1240.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of the Talk Station.